Hi guys, it's really good to have you here. This is Calista Adebayo and you're welcome to another episode of Love and Light. Well, this is a really special edition, and as you well know, today is World Sickle Cell Day. And yes, I ought to have uploaded this file since morning, but then better late than never. Alright, so I had a guest on this program, and yes, throughout the course of the program, if you listen, you realize that we'll be having three of these kind of episodes where we'll talk about different things. This particular episode, we treated childhood experiences. We shared a part of us that some of you do not know. And yeah, on our other episodes, we'll talk about relationship, career, and things like that. So yeah, we came together and we decided that we wanted to talk about what sickle cell is, what it's about, how it has been for us, how have we been able to cope with it and all. And yes, Lovejoy was just so really amazing, and I love the fact that I had her here. So please enjoy, listen. I am really grateful to her for being part of this, and I'm really grateful to you for listening. So if you have not been supporting any course at all, you've not been listening, you've not been sharing, this is really dear and really important to me. So please, I need you to share, listen, comment, and like, and the likes. I'm also going to drop a link where you can also support financially if you wish to. I'm going to drop the link on this episode, so if you want to support financially, you want to help and all, you can always drop something as thank you or support. Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah, so straight to it, don't let me spoil the beauty of it and the fun, but trust me, there were lots and lots of juicy details that you do not want to miss. So, and expect episode 2, expect episode 3. We're going to be having amazing guests on this particular set of episodes, and yes, after that we're done with that. So happy World Sickle Cell Day, warriors, and yeah, I'm proud to be a warrior. Thank you.
Hi Calista, how are you?
I'm fine, and you? How are you doing? It's good to have you here.
It's good to have you here too. How are you enjoying the weather?
Oh, it's really cold, but then we're working through it. What's up?
I'm good. I wish I could just cuddle up on my bed and, you know, hold a book.
I know, right?
Like, I really can't. Life won't allow me to do that, really.
I just saw someone's status like 1 minute ago, and the person was like, this weather is just wasting, literally.
It's
like,
wasting.
She doesn't have someone to cuddle.
Oh, please. So I'm not even talking about someone to cuddle now. I'm just saying I want to coil up in my bed, have a blanket over me, and read a book, or, you know. But, like, a girl has to work, literally, and it's so, so, so annoying.
Nice to be here. It's great to be here.
Cool. So, what are we talking about today?
Okay, so real quick, we're talking about different things that has to do with sickle cell. You know, today is World Sickle Cell Day.
Yes.
So we're celebrating World Sickle Cell Day and the awareness, the campaign, and all. So we just have to talk about something.
Yeah. I'm very, very glad that you decided to do this with me. Story coming together to share to the world and to, you know, educate people, really. Thank you. So now moving to the topic of today, we are bringing to light one of the issues about life and that has been, you know, kept in the dark for so long. And I was before we came in, I was like, why do we keep making people aware of this, aware of that, and aware of another thing? Because these issues did not just start today. As you mean, there were issues that just started today. That it will be new, and then people will need education. But issues that we fight for awareness, or we go hard to make aware, are issues that has existed for as long as humans have existed. Also, exactly. If you know what I mean. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because created awareness for rape and gender-based violence, we're trying to make aware of racism and all of that. And even, you know, with sickle cell disease, we are trying to, you know, educate people and make them aware of this issue. But most of these issues have existed for as long as humans have also existed. So what do you think that issue is? Why do we need to constantly make aware?
Well, I feel like we have to constantly keep ringing it in people's ears. We have to keep reminding them that, yes, there's actually something called, okay, I like to call it the invisible illness. Because literally, it's a disease, it's an illness where people battle for their life, try to survive every single day.
True.
Okay. Now, I feel like less than 70% of the population in Nigeria have heard of the word sickle cell anemia or sickle cell disease. True. All right. But then I feel like they don't literally understand what it's about. If you ask people, okay, I did a random poll on my IG some days ago, and then I asked, how many of you know what sickle cell disease is? And quite a number of people think they've heard of sickle cell, they know sickle cell, blah, blah, blah. But then when I asked some further questions and all, I realized that people only have heard of it or have a sibling or a friend that has it. But then they literally do not understand that it encompasses so much.
So they know it, but they don't know about it.
Exactly.
That's crazy. And then there are lots of misconceptions. Let's not even go there.
Of course. Okay, so just to put this out there for anyone listening, the next couple of episodes directed towards sickle cell awareness and campaign. Like we said, today is World Sickle Cell Awareness Day. But then we decided we're not going to be stopping there. The next three episodes will be to educate people, share our experiences. You know, we're speaking now from the perspective of people who have actually gone through all this and can share it to people. So today's episode, we'll be talking about quite a number of things, ranging from our childhood experiences to physical activities we participated in and those we were restricted from participating in, you know, restrictions, various kind of restrictions we've literally gone through, transmission, because quite a number of people think this is a transmittable disease. Like literally when you sit with someone that has SCD, you automatically contact it.
True.
So and also parents, you know, how our parents were able to cope with it, their mental health and all.
Okay.
So all this, we'll be treating all this today, talking about it and enlightening you, because that's the idea. Enlightening you about it.
I think the first time we met together when I started Radio Walk in school, and you also came to start Radio Walk, and we just sort of clicked, right? Because I could obviously see that you were a warrior, and I think you got that aura from me also.
With the big water bottle, yes, of course.
You guys, the water bottle came to play again. I'm a water bottle girl for life. I have one right by my side as I speak. You don't even want to know. So, like, I think I've known you for over 3 years now, I can say that. And you've actually
over
been
4 years.
Over 4 years. And I can say that you've actually been a great support. Just knowing that someone is out there fighting the battle that I'm fighting also, and you know, just understands life from my perspective also. I think that has helped tailor our bond really.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah, so diving into the topic for today,
childhood experiences.
Yeah.
How, before I go into that, I really want to hear from you. How was it for you?
Well, for me, I was a fat baby, very fat baby. My name was Fatima. I was nicknamed Fatima rather. I have pictures to prove I was a really chubby kid. Even till like say 5 years old, I was still really, really chubby, looking healthy and everything. You know, my mom used to say that they didn't even know that I had any condition because I, you know, just looked really healthy as a child and everything. And later they started noticing that my eyes were yellow, so that was a sign of jaundice, right?
Yeah.
And so they started, you know, going to the doctor and everything, and that's when they knew that you know, I was born with a condition, because my parents are educated. So before they got married, they had tests really, and when the results came out, it showed that they were compatible, you know, and not knowing that some mistake happened somewhere, It was something that they didn't plan for because they had taken the necessary precautions. Now, it would be a different case if they hadn't. But doctor was careless somewhere and, you know, didn't do the thing he was supposed to do in the right way. And that was why what happened, you know. So I think I became aware of my I don't like calling it a condition, or I became aware of the battle
of your lifestyle.
Let's call it that. my unique lifestyle when I was say 7-8 years old. I think my parents went to the hospital that time, and then we all had the genotype test done again, and that was when my doctor decided to educate me about the issues and all of that, because sometimes I could not understand why I'm feeling hot and my parents would still want me in thick clothing. Like, I used to be a very, very nasty kid. Like, why would you put menthol on my chest? I'm not cold, I'm hot and all of that. This weather is nice and all of that. They would literally wear me like some cardigan or sweats and pants to bed, and middle of the night I'll fling it on. I'm like, rah, it's not cold, you know? And so they felt the need to educate me, and then that's why I really got the education quite early. And then I started taking necessary precautions after that time, you know. I understood better why they wanted me to do this and wanted me to do that. But I didn't do everything they asked me to do, because as I grew older, I became just tired of the restrictions, really.
Primary school, secondary school, how was it like?
Private school for me, primary school rather, I said private school. It was okay. Yeah, in primary school, I was really into sports. I used to like basketball, even as a short child. But like, I kept doing it. There was one time I played really for a long time that day. It was sports day, and then I went back home and I felt really ill. And so they told me to stop. I really loved basketball like so much all through my primary school, because my school was really like into basketball, and like I would go for them competitions and all of that, but I couldn't play. But I just wanted to be there since I couldn't play. And I had to stop sports entirely at some point. In secondary school, I wanted to join the cheerleading team, you know, do some calisthenics, do, you know, it was inter-house or competition or what they call it. And I wanted to just participate in something, you know, be part of what other people are doing, but I could not do it. Sometimes I would even hide and join, and then when you know, the head of the school sees me, like, bro, you can't do that, you're not allowed to do that, and then they remove me. It's so sad that, you know, I couldn't do what everybody else was doing. I felt left out a lot of the time, and it wasn't fair, but I understood, but I didn't want to accept it, you know. It was really tough for my parents growing up. I would join regardless, even though they had told all the school authorities that, oh, this and this and this. Or like, I'll go to a team where the teacher doesn't know me or anything, or and then do what I'm not supposed to do just because I like it and I wanted to be a part of it also. And even in secondary school, my mom was like, oh, just study something as skilled as accounting. It's good for you. It's good for your, what's it called, zodiac sign. It's easy. It's chilling. Science is really hectic. Science, you have to do this, you have to do that, you have to read a lot, and that's stressful. But like, that's one of the ways in which I tried to be different also. I was like, rah, I've been restricted a lot in my life, you know, having to do a lot of things. So I'd said that as so long as I have one head and everybody has one head, that's science I will do. And so I went on to science class, and my mom is there saying, oh, you followed friends to science, da 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 da. Well, I used to love the, what's it called, finance segment, but I had a role model that disappointed me. And, you know, I just lost the love for finance, you know. So I just decided to pave my way in the science area. That's another side to it, apart from the fact that I wanted I could not do anything, or I shouldn't do something either. Mm. And yeah, apart from that, anytime they tell me to take a drug, I take it though, because I know that when an episode starts, I wish that I had taken the drug when I was supposed to. You know, anything that would prevent me from having an episode, try to prevent it, because in that episode a lot of things can happen. I've been in several situations where the pain has been so severe that, you know, I've literally asked to forgot to, you know, just take my life, and so that maybe at least I would rest and I won't feel anything. You know, I've asked God to just end this. I'm tired. I can't do this anymore. I've been in situations where my mom is crying in the hospital. I'm crying my eyes out. Nurses are even crying, you know? And it's just such a battle and such a struggle, really.
Wow. I really can relate to all what you said. So, you know, growing up and all, I didn't understand for a long time. I really did not understand why I was being forced to wear sweater, cardigan, you know, sweatpants and all. I really did not understand what it was. I didn't know why there was always a heater in my room. I didn't understand why I must always use eucalyptus oil or menthol before going anywhere, drink loads of water. And, you know, growing up, going to primary school, it was really tough because, first off, I didn't have so many friends. I literally barely had friends because people literally resented me for the fact that I was not being beaten in class when everybody does.
Oh my god.
And then they all get punished, they all get beaten, and the teacher just gets to Kalista or, you know, Tadi and says, "Oh, Tadi, sit down." And then everybody's so upset, everyone is so angry and all. I didn't understand what it was. I didn't like the fact that I was being treated like that. I really hated it. I wanted to be beaten like every other person was being beaten. I wanted to go to the country because it really was affecting me, knowing that a teacher comes to, maybe even if you didn't participate in the crime and all, you just want to feel among and, you know, feel
true
to belong with your friends. And then the teacher comes to you and says, "Sit down," and then you can see anger in everyone's eyes. Like, if they had a way to pounce on you, they literally will pounce on you.
True, and I'm sure that you fought a lot for the acceptance of your friends, of your mates, of your peers, right?
You know, it was, and then it was really that tough that. Because growing up and all, you can't, if I tell you, for a long time, I didn't go to the market. Like, I literally was restricted. I couldn't go to the market. I learned how to go to the market on my own, maybe late into my secondary school, because I feel like part of it was fear. My mom was maybe afraid that something might happen and all. So every time she went to the market, I was always going with her. I never went alone. So, you know, or if then while growing up, it's most likely I'm locked inside. We call it our get inside, you know. Who grew up in a compound with gates and all, you know. Sure. But I felt like I could relate. I feel now I could relate with why they were doing all that. They were worried, yeah. They were scared, yeah. Yeah. You know, and they were trying their best to protect us. But it really, really affected me, because primary school, it wasn't as tough as secondary school, because immediately I got into secondary school, I was bullied a lot by people, because people felt like, why should I be different? Why should I be treated differently? Why should they literally thought I was a teacher's pet, and I hated that. I really hated the fact that I was being treated differently. You know, even down to debates that only has to do with talking, I was literally not allowed to participate because everybody felt like I was going to pass out or die. So it was so painful. It was literally painful because you see everyone doing, we call it PHE, or we used to call it PHE then, physical activities and health activities. And, you know, you see people participating in all those, and you're really interested, you want to participate, and then you're thinking, oh no, Teddy Grant's down. And then you just feel so hurt. You're trying to carry even down to a seat, a chair, you're just trying to lift the chair, and everybody goes,
no, don't. True, I get that. And it's so, some people say, oh, they think people generally think that, oh, they're probably trying to help out or something, but you feel so less of yourself or less human because, like, it's just a chair, Biko. Like, I will not break with the chair. Do you understand? I really understand what you're saying, because it made me remember some scenarios in school also. Someone literally said, you're letting her do that. Oh, she will break. Or I'm like, bruh, I'm made with blood and bone like you are.
You know, I had a whole lot of people telling me that. I had quite a number of people telling other people that don't dress her or don't let her die if she dies in your hand, you know. And statements like that, whatever, they might have been saying it out of love or mockingly, but then they did not know that statements like that were tearing you apart. Like, I had zero self-confidence.
Even up till now, when you talk about self-confidence, it's still a struggle.
Okay, so, you know, going through all those things last week, just last week, I was in my old secondary school group chat, and I don't read their messages every day because it's always so bulky. But then this particular day when I clicked on it, I noticed I was tagged. So I went down to check the message that I was tagged, and then someone made a comment that he hated me so much throughout secondary school.
Why?
And then I got curious, and I was like, dude, what's up? Why did you hate me? And he was like, why was I always being treated differently? Why was I never being punished? I wanted to go through all what you were going through, but then no one ever treated me the same. And it was like, and every time, you know, it was so painful because back then they'll come and call me names and say some things, and then I'm like, excuse me, I get beaten at home. I don't like being treated different in school. In school, at home, my parents don't spare me. If I do something wrong, I literally received koboko for quite a number of years.
I think with me, going back now, remembering, I literally told everybody that, wow, I'm like this way, so don't stress me. Or this, I think I was very, very, I told a lot of people, I think most of my classmates knew, because I also had I have like sinusitis. It's a nasal congestion issue that I've also battled with since I was 7, and I had to go to the hospital a lot, and I missed school for a long time. I literally had clinic every Tuesday and all of that. So for every person that I knew, or for every person that was close to me in school, you know, I didn't see it as a problem, you know. I didn't see it as anything. I just, okay, you know, for every black person, there's a light-skinned person. So I just felt like, raw, I was probably the light-skinned person amongst 20 dark-skinned person. So it's obvious, and then it's nothing to be secretive about. So I was like, raw, I have sinusitis, and then I went to the doctor, and this person said this. And then if sometimes, you know, with episodes, you don't come to school for like days or weeks. Wow. Like, and then you come back and then you're like, I had an episode and all of that. So I feel like people knew about me and knew what I was going through, and that's why I didn't have as much hate.
I felt like people knew, but then, you know, as kids, people did not understand, which is part of what we're talking about. You know, growing up and all, I kept telling, I got rebellious at a point in time of my life, because, you know, at school I was going through a whole lot. I get home, my parents are stressed from work, and the next thing is, you guys go into your room, read your books. So literally, I felt like I wanted attention from school. I was not getting it. I barely had friends. I wanted attention from, my parents were really stressed out. So I grew up a little bit bitter and angry. And you know, even when you feel like you're having a connection with people and trying to relate and all, you know, people come to you, which was something really annoying. Oh my god, I was talking to my mom yesterday, and my mom said people with sickle cell die when they are 12. And let's imagine that you're 11 and then you start counting down.
Girl, I had a lot of that.
So I'm going to die, I have 6 months left to live.
Yeah.
And even at 6 months, you're not even happy for the rest of that 6 months, because you're literally counting down. your depth.
Seriously, you're speaking for me. It happened to me one time when I think I went to buy something from a shop and something, and then this Yoruba woman asked me, "Oh, why is your eyes yellow?" And then a lot of people don't think I understand Yoruba, and I do because my mom is Yoruba and my dad speaks Yoruba a lot too. So I can't speak fluently yet, but I understand. And then she tells the other woman, "Oh, you don't know that Awo Abiku or they don't live long, or they don't used to get past the age of this 21 or something." You know, I've had people, random people, tell me things like that. And anytime I come close to one of these ages, is fear in my heart.
Panic attack.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But like right now, I don't really care anymore. You know,
exactly.
I've heard somewhere say, "Oh, they don't get past 25 and all of that, and I'll be 25 next month by God's grace, and I'll be alive and I'll be well." And you know, when I was even growing up, when I get to some of these ages and then I have an episode, I'm like, "Oh my God, this is it. This is how I go. This is how I go. Oh my God." And it's just a life of fear. And even people aren't helping because they are not educated.
You know, people come all throughout this period, people come to tell you, "Oh, I had 12, let's say you passed 12, then they come, "Oh no, it's 15. You know,
I had 21, and then I had 25.
Let me share a secret. I clocked 25 March this year, and then before I clocked 25, as of February, I was already having panic attacks. Literally, in my journal, I started writing. I did 25 things to be grateful for. I did 25 days of gratitude. I went to an orphanage because I kept saying, "Oh, well, if I'm going to die, at least I might as well make an impact in life."
Yeah.
So, you know, I kept writing, "Oh, okay, if I do not live past the age of 25, at least I am grateful for the fact that I've done this, I have done that, and all." You know, so, but then literally after crossing 25 and all, I was like, "See, I don't care if I literally give up the ghost right now." The fact that in no matter how little the way is, I made impact in someone's life, even if it's just one person, is
true.
It's enough for me.
True.
You know, so growing up, going through all those things, I had friends later, but then, you know, it's a different thing to have friends. It's a different thing to try to educate your friends that this is what this is about. How if an episode happens, this is what to do. And then
what moment right there though, like another issue that when you just talked about, another issue that crossed my mind was that even as we have addressed or have felt as parents, as children rather, what do you think our parents were going through also? Let's just consider based on their mental health, or they're just you know, that constant fear also of losing a child. Even, you know, because we just talked about our constant fear of dying and all of that. What do you think? What can you put yourself in your parents' shoe for a minute?
Yeah, okay. I was about going into that anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
Take for example, we talked about the fact that whenever you are having an episode, you always think about, you know, whenever those pains are coming and all, can I just give up the ghost? It's better anything, just take my life. It's better than feeling this pain and feeling, you know. And then, you know, sometimes you get so frustrated and then you say it out. Maybe before you were saying it in, you were talking to God, and then sometimes being there so much, and then you're like, "God, just kill me." And then your parents arrive beside you, and you know, sometimes I could see the look, the pain in my mom's eye. I could see how sad she is. I could see she'll come to my bed and say, "Stop speaking like that." Sometimes she would snap at me. I was literally fine. We all went inside, happy, nothing was wrong. And then I started to sleep. Less than 30 minutes into my sleep, I had an episode, a major episode. Like, I literally was on the floor and couldn't move, nothing. So my brother went to call my parents. And by the time they got to where I was already sleeping off. So immediately, middle of the night, my dad carried me, car and everything, straight to the hospital. I literally was sleeping off. I felt like this was it. I was going. My mom kept hitting me. My mom was like, "Open your eyes. Open your eyes. Keep saying blood of Jesus." And, you know, we got to the hospital. I literally was, I had given up. I was tired. And my doctors have always told me something right from growing up. The fact that, see, you have to fight for your life.
True.
As
it's
soon
a
as you decide that, you know what, I am tired, I can't battle this again, I can't do this again. As soon as you give up, there's no medication in this world that can
True.
Save you.
True.
So literally, every time you have an episode, what keeps you is God and your willingness to fight to live.
True.
So every episode, you are literally fighting for your life. You're saying, you know what, I don't want to die. I am fighting every battle. And let me describe how an episode could look like. Now, imagine someone throws a cement block on you. At the same time, person starts hitting the hammer. Someone is flipping the knife. At the same time, someone pours pepper and cold water. No, I'm trying to describe. It doesn't cut it, but then just imagine all those.
Just,
at the same time, someone uses blade to pierce you and cut you in different places. Someone is hitting you with a nail and you're feeling all those things
just at once. That's something, man. For me, I'm putting myself in the shoes of my parents. I've always done that all the time, and sometimes it gives me the strength to actually hold my pain in and, you know, just not make it look as severe as it is. Because so when I was 13, my parents decided to split. And it was hard on me, definitely. It would be hard on every child and all of that. But like, deep down in my heart, I used to feel like it was because of me. At some point, it was because I was maybe a child and half of a child. You know, the expense, the time, the fear, and all of that. And it really, really. It began to affect me at some point. But when I talked to my mother about it, she's like, no, that's not why. And that gave me peace for a little bit. So now with my mom as a single parent, it's harder because she's literally the only one available. You hear me? And she's a woman, she's a mother. She's the only one. I don't even know how to describe it. I don't know. I can't even describe what she goes through, really, because even now that I'm old, if I'm somewhere and I call her, Mommy, I'm on my way to the hospital. She's leaving whatever she's doing, good, meaningful, profitable, anything that she's doing there and then. And she's coming to meet me in the hospital. And for the next few days, she's sleeping in the hospital with me and going to work every day. And going around every day, you know, it's aside from the fact that she's a single parent because my dad decided to leave, that financially it's crazy. So I can't, you know, put it towards what she goes through every time. And so when she tells me to do certain things, like, oh, don't expose yourself to cold and do those certain things, I try to do it just for her. Sometimes I might not agree with a lot of things that she says, but I'm ready to do it because I know what they go through. So when I see people on the internet saying, oh, I love this guy, it's AS, I'm AS, but nobody should tell me to leave him because I love him.
I know, all right.
It will take more than love to keep you guys in that relationship.
Of
like
course.
when the wahala starts, you will forget love. It is only God that can sustain that relationship. And you start blaming each other because you are aware of the situation. You are educated enough to know what the situation brings, and you decide to, you know, follow your heart and ignore at the expense of a human being, number one, and your future. Because truth is, being a sickle cell caretaker or a parent is not easy. Mm-hmm. Imagine you seeing your child crying in pain. When Jesus was on the cross, because I'm Christian, when Jesus was on the cross and his mother was looking at him in the cross, she could not do anything to help him. But she knew that he was going through pain. That's how it feels, you know? That's how it feels. You can't help. All you can do is blame yourself. I was sick recently, early this year. I had an episode. I was in the hospital. And I was crying in pain. And even as old as I am, And even as used to it as my mom is, she was crying also.
Yeah.
And she kept saying she's sorry. And it's not her fault, really. You know, assuming it was, then maybe not everybody to be sorry. But it's not her fault, really. And she keeps saying she's sorry. And I'm like, mommy, don't cry. I forget my illness. I like start comforting her because I need her strength for me to be strengthened, you know? So I have to make sure that she's
strong enough for you.
Yes. So it's a lot on the parent as well as it is for the patient or for the warrior. Mm. Now imagine people that don't have parents. Imagine people that have to live with their uncles and aunties. Now, the kind of treatment that your parents will give you will be different from any other person. My mom says something all the time. She says that nobody can treat you as your mother or your parents will.
Ooh,
unless of how much they love you.
Parents. Mm-hmm. Okay, there was this particular day I was talking to a doctor.
Yeah.
No, she's not a medical doctor. She's a therapist, sort of.
Okay.
And then she was like, you know, I was really down and I just opened up and all. And she said, imagine if you're going through all this and you're feeling this way, now imagine how your parents feel every single day, every time they wake up, every time they see you. Like, they would always have that reminder in their hearts why did they do this, what could they have done better and all. So it's like every single day they are reminded of the fact that maybe why didn't they maybe probe further or something and all, you know. So I had to just now put myself in that shoe, like literally, how do they feel every single time? And I had to try to be considerate. You know, there are times I'm really down, there are times I'm very sick and I need help, and then they're like, you know, my mom studies me a whole lot, so sometimes she sees that I wince, and when she asks what's wrong, I'm like, oh, I'm fine, I'm all right. And then she's like, no, I've been watching you for the past 5 minutes and then you're wincing. What's going on? So, you know, she can tell that something is wrong.
Yeah,
now, I've met a couple of people, talking about parents too, I've met a couple of people who have had parents that have not treated them nicely. Mm. Now, I had this close friend, a guy actually, and he is sick himself, and he was treated terribly throughout his childhood days, even up to now. I think now that he's an adult, he moved out and all. And, you know, he was always treated like, why are you people, you're a burden to us, why are you disturbing us? And even his siblings, the way he was treated, his siblings were the ones trying to show him love, like, don't treat him like this. It's literally,
but those parents just lack education, really, because it's their fault. Literally, I'll be a horrible child to those parents, should be told, because, you know, it's their fault, and because they lack education, and all you can do is, if that guy actually is strong, because another child would have committed suicide since, and they will live, it will be on their head forever.
Of course.
For example, there's
this young woman that sent me a message, I think last year. Now, I've known her for about 2 years thereabouts, or 3 years. And she sent me a message last year. She was like, Daddy, please, I want to ask some questions. And I was like, yes, ma'am, go ahead. And she said she's married and she has a son, and that her son is sickle cell, and she doesn't know what to do. She doesn't even know anything about it. Like, she barely has information and all. And she was like, how do you cope? What have you been doing and all? And I had to start, you know, educating her, telling her about it, telling her precautionary measures she can take, things she can do to protect her child and all. And then I gave her some pages, like, follow SoSo page on social media, because she's social media inclined. And, you know, follow their posts. If you ask questions, if you have questions, ask questions, and all. Have a doctor your child sees. You know, because another thing is being able to relate ER with a particular doctor. Because let's not even dive into the way we are treated in hospitals. So most time when you get to an hospital and all, there's this girl don't come again attitude. When she here last week, like, so, you know, she really had, so I feel like some parents are making effort to take care of that child. They are making effort, like, okay, now this has happened, but what are we going to do about it? We're not going to cry over spilled milk. you know, but then some parents just don't
care. Can you call out those pages, or will you send it to them so that I can put it out to, because there's some parents that might need help with this issue too.
Yeah, of course. Okay, one of those pages is we have Sickle Cell 101 is on the IG. It's called Sickle Cell 101. We also have SCARF. SCARF is one of the foundations for sickle cell. Like, it literally is the foundation most of us follow. Yeah, it's called Sickle Cell Foundation Nigeria. We also have Sickle Cell Watch. We also have Sickle Cell Matters, Sickle Cell Unite. We have loads and loads. We have Warrior Story. We have Crimson Bow, Adro Sickle Cell. You know, we have loads and loads and loads of pages where warriors come together to share experiences when they need help. See, if we talk about the amount people spend on treating warriors, you know, that amount literally can build houses, to be honest, can buy land. But then the fact that I feel some parents get frustrated sometimes because they feel every time they have to come to spend money, use money to take care of you, money that they can use for other things.
True, now, and the drugs are not really cheap.
Mm-hmm. I remember there was a time one of my friends had an episode, alright? And she was in school, she had an episode, and when her father came, her father was like, "Why are you behaving like this? Why would you do this? That now you're making me spend money that I didn't budget, money that we can use to buy food at home or even clothes." Now, I understand he was angry or upset from whatever perspective he was feeling at that time, but then that was not even a nice thing to say to her in that particular condition where she was. Like, imagine her being on bed already, having this mindset like, "Oh my god, this is going on, blah blah blah," and then you're coming to say it's your fault, why are you on bed and all. Literally, it really, really dampens that kind of person's spirit.
True, so I feel it does.
Some parents are making efforts, but then other parents need to make more efforts.
True.
Other parents need to make more efforts.
And the effort is the fact that there should not even be a parent with a warrior child, because we are trying to raise awareness, and the awareness we're trying to raise is the fact that don't even marry if you know that your genotype is not compatible. That is where the gospel we're trying to preach, that don't even start it immediately. Talking about you just mentioned a couple of foundations. For me, I have never been or joined or seen the need to join any foundation, and that's because number one, my mom isn't big about talking about it. Number two is I had a friend that joined because he was going through, a lot that time. He had one really, really bad side effects of, being a warrior. And so they thought that he needed that help. And then he went for one meeting and he came back saying that it felt like a lot of people there were sad, and it was just discouraging, and it was so, damping and all of that. And he didn't see a need for it, so he's never going. So okay. I didn't need it.
Don't get me wrong. I mentioned pages people can follow to gain more information. I don't belong to any foundation. Mm-hmm. Although recently, the hospital that has treated me right from when I was a kid created this mini group, like a support group. Mm-hmm. But then occasionally, I think I've gone there twice for like over a year that they've been running it.
Why do you think that groups like this are not strong here in Nigeria? Because out there in the US, they are really strong. Like, there is a strong community. Like, because, out there, support groups are really important. You have AI, you have, for every condition, there's a support group there. Why do you think that, even though we obviously do need support, we obviously need people that think like us and go through what we are going through to feel like we are humans also, we need people to constantly remind us that, yes, we are human beings also, and we can function like the average human being? Why do you think that it's not so valid, or it's not so expressed in Nigeria, even though we have a lot of people living with the condition here in Nigeria?
I feel like a whole lot of groups have sprung up over the years to raise awareness and campaign against people even getting married, people that are not compatible, or even to support warriors. I would like to call them support groups. A whole lot of support groups are sprung up. But then the issue we are having is 90% of the time when these support groups come up, they're not being handled by warriors themselves. Like, maybe they're being headed or whatever by people who have concern or who care about those causes, people who are someone that's gone through that or know someone, people who think they're passionate about things like that. But then the issue is, if you have not gone, take for example, it's just like me telling you about an asthma attack, educating you about an asthma attack, and then I have never had asthma, I have never been through asthma before. So, I can't educate you about it if I have not literally been through it. I'm seeing you, I'm seeing how you go through the pain, I see you have attacks, I'm literally there with you. But then how you feel inside, emotionally, how you deal with it, I can't go through all that with you. I can only feel your pain, see what you go through, draw strength from it and all, and try to educate people about it. But then I can't talk about it as much as you would address it. I feel like we've had a whole lot of people who are passionate about stuff like that, but then they have not necessarily gone through things like that before, So that alone, when they are coming to talk about things like that, coming to address issues like that, there's always this down, sad, sober atmosphere, which is one of the reasons why I never joined all those kind of groups. There's always this atmosphere like, oh, you're a warrior, I'm a warrior, I'm a warrior. Yeah, let's all sit down, let's think about it together. Or, I feel like it's like a pity party sort of. And but then for some people, for some groups are really trying. Some support groups, especially those ones being headed by warriors themselves, are really, really, really good support system. Like, they're out there campaigning, because another major campaign is blood, donating blood. Because literally, we need blood every now and then.
So, I agree.
Yeah, there are a whole lot of support groups coming out to say, donate blood, warriors need blood. Let's say there's a warrior in an ICU. These support groups come out to say, please, there's an emergency, we need blood, we need a donor and all. So, they're really helpful, they're really trying. And then another
what I feel about this support group is that it's actually a hard thing to talk about. When I created Chimes and Bands, my first episode was based on what my podcast was going to be about. And one of the reasons I started a podcast is to share my story and my experience about, living life as a warrior. And I've had, say, 8 episodes out, and I've not brought myself to actually talking about it. I've sometimes when I want to, it's just like, do people actually want to hear what I want to say? Can people
That's another thing.
Relate to what I want to say? Should I shut up?
Do they care?
Yeah, do they care? And will I not be hindering myself in some way? Because another thing we're going to talk about, I think in another episode, is career and occupation. So will someone hear this and think
even
less
relationship
of me?
Wise
yeah will someone hear this and think less of me? Will I be viewed in another way? Because I've been in different situations that the moment you say that you are a warrior, they just start looking at you some kind of way. And I think that's why a lot of warriors are hush-hush about it too. Because it's not, like you said, it's an invincible disease. It's not a disease. Bro, like, I don't look like it. A lot of people, sometimes when I tell a lot of people, they're like, bro, you don't look like it. And then I'm like, yes, exactly. I thank God. Because one thing a lot of people are not aware of also is that it's a spectrum. Just like, what's the name of this thing? I forgot it. But like, what I say, no, it's not Parkinson's. It's a spectrum, though. Because there are people that, they're strong, they don't look like it, you can't even tell. And there are people that every other week they're in the hospital. Yeah, so I just thank God that I'm one of the really healthy ones. You know, I probably just go to the hospital once every year. I just have like a really bad episode once every year, and I can manage myself a lot, because the reason I fail like education, especially the warrior at a little age, is so that they can manage their life well, manage their stress well, and that will prevent lots of episodes from occurring. So maybe once in a year I have one really bad episode and I'm in the hospital for a while and all of that. But I'm hush hush about it sometimes, because my parents don't even want me talking about it. You know, my family doesn't want me talking about it. My mom used to say something, oh, everyone has their own in their body, but nobody says anything, so why do you want to say your own? But growing up, I have come to realize that I have a lot of questions about life as a warrior. A lot of questions. And there are millions of people that have these questions that I have, because they are walking in the same shoe that I am walking in. And there are people that are older than me that have lived their life too. So how did they handle these things? I want to know. And that's why I decided to start my podcast. But I have not gotten the liver yet to actually go through with it. And I feel that's what the same issue is with support group.
Yeah. Another thing is, okay, talking about major education, I think it's better we also educate people that even sickle cell anemia, there are different levels to it. Now, the same way, you know, people know that we have AA, AS, and SS. But then one thing people don't know is we also have AC,
we have S,
we have SB Talisma, we have, you know, different other variations to it. And you know, some of these variations, it's just like degree to pain level.
True.
You know, it's just like different degrees to different pain level. As much as I or you would like to say that we've been through painful episodes and all, you see some other people's episodes and then you're like,
girl. So like back in uni, there was this boy that was my friend, and he's SC, and SC is new, it's quite new, you know, it's another type of, it's a mutation from SS. And he didn't know, he didn't have enough education. Even doctors in Nigeria are still confused about it. Do you know that their pain level is another thing? And Mans was a smoker.
Wow.
Mans was a smoker. He started smoking even before he knew about his condition. Guy had to just stop him, because he doesn't do like fra, just like normal cigarettes. He's into the whole shebang, yeah? Like when I call him sometimes, I'm like, right, in the hospital, I tell you, it was hard for him to stop, but he had to. And that was because he did not have enough education about himself and even about the condition. And like you said, it's a spectrum.
Also talking about education, I would like to drop this. Yeah, we're going to talk about this particular thing on another episode, but then, okay, take for example, one day I went to church back then in school, and on getting to this church, they were having, you know, from time to time, they have discussions about maybe a particular topic or something. And I think that day they decided to talk about compatibility, sickle cell and all. And I was in church, I was at the back. And I was just listening. And then they talked about, a guy stood up and was like, you know what, if wife gets pregnant and his wife ever has a child that is sickle cell, before giving birth, he will ask the child, the woman to abort the child. Why would he give birth? Is like that, you know, he said a whole lot of things. And you know, imagine being in that kind of atmosphere and people are saying yes, and you know, people are supporting the thing, and then you're like, hello, Hi everybody, I'm here.
I think we have similar experiences, a lot of similar experiences.
I mean, you feel so down, like, are you guys saying they should have aborted me? Like, hi guys, girl, I'm here.
Girl, let me tell you about this. So in high school, I was in this biology class, and we were talking about genotypes and traits and all of that biological nonsense, and my biology teacher opened his rotten mouth and said that settlers are not supposed to be on planet Earth, that they should just pack all of them and take them to another planet, that they are the one corrupting humans and genetics, they are messing up genetics. Can you imagine that coming from a biology teacher? I looked at him and I just shook my head. I'm like, what? I couldn't hold it though. I set my mind in that class, because, sir, they are an educated educationalist. The actual. Imagine that coming from a human being's mouth. We'll talk about segregation later in another episode, but.
Those are some of the statements that come out from people's mouth, and it's really, really painful. It's really hurtful when people have that kind of mindset. When we started this thing, we mentioned the fact that we have a whole lot of educated people, you know, literates that have heard about what sickle cell is. But we also mentioned that we mentioned the fact that we have a whole lot of illiterate, you know, educated, uneducated people who really have heard of what it is, but then do not understand what it is and think they can make statements about it, and you know, just people will take it lightly. But then one thing I always want you to remember is sometimes when you make these passing statements or these snide remarks that you think does not really count at all, it really affects most of us mental health.
It does
a whole lot.
It does.
Quite a number of us go into depression.
True.
Quite a number of us keep to ourselves, you know, just lock up and just, you know, knowing that when you meet new people, you are always thinking, oh, will this person accept me? And all you are always even holding this information back because you feel like
I don't hold it back all, because it's a very good way to see people out of your life.
So we would like to talk about restrictions and transmission, so the kind of restrictions that's brought, and you know, if it's transmittable. But first off, I would like to mention that it is not a transmittable disease or
not transmittable.
The illness.
You know, before we started this episode, I put out the question like, would you marry someone that is a warrior? Will you hold their hand through sickness and health? Will you see them through every episode? Will you pay for their medical bill? And someone replies like, he doesn't mind, so long as they find a way of not transferring it to their child. And I'm like, what is this HIV we're talking about? Do you debate? Like, it's not going to get to your child so long as you're AA. Like, what the actual? Like, why would you even think that it is HIV or AIDS, or it's communicable or transmittable? It's not even coronavirus, fam. And coronavirus kills even more than sickle cell, fam. Like, there are worse things than sickle cell, right?
Of course.
So, ladies, gentlemen, grandpas, grandpa, mother, father, sickle cell disease, aka SCD,
is not
transmittable. Calista, say it.
It's not transmittable, guys. It's not.
At all.